when the sea comes back. But if there's no way of moving back, well, when your face falls apart, have you got enough time?
From the land of the sky and to high strangers around the globe, this is Joshua P. Warren's Speaking of Strange, hosted by Vance Pollock. Vance Pollock. Vance Pollock.
And the world is becoming more and more insane every day. Welcome to the program that gives you breaking news and insight into the paranormal and downright weird, where the unusual becomes usual, and we don't just discuss it, we go into the field to investigate. I am Vance Pollock, joined in the studio by investigator Shelley Wright. How are you, Shelley?
Great. How are you? I missed you guys so much.
Oh, you too. It's good to be back, isn't it?
It is.
And Sam, the animal steel producer. How are you, Sam?
Hey, buddy. It's been a few.
Yeah. Been too long. Catch this. Florida fire started by book burning destroys two homes. Two homes in Nassau County, Florida were destroyed in a wildfire caused by a man who was burning books Wednesday. Only a few minor injuries to emergency personnel have been reported in what's being called the Garfield Road Fire. According to Florida Forest Service, it has burned an estimated 696 acres near Briceville, about 20 miles west of Jacksonville. Six other homes were damaged, and at least 14 sheds and other structures were severely damaged or considered a total loss. Firefighters will continue to work in the area for days. Authorities will be watching strong winds predicted for the afternoon to see how they may affect the fire. The fire started when a group of men was burning paperback books they wanted banned and said the books were an offense against God. Quote, it was purely an accident. When burning these unholy books, the fire escaped. The fire spiraled out to about 5 acres and began spreading out of control, fueled by windy conditions. We blame it all on the devil. The man has been issued a notice of violation and will be sent a forestry bill for all the equipment and personnel used in fighting the fire, which could be several thousands of dollars. They could be held civilly liable for any damage caused by the fire. Yeah, burning bans in effect. That includes unholy books.
I mean, I'm not a big fan of book burning. You know this. as an avid reader, I mean, yes, are there a lot of books out there that you and I will have no interest in that you're like, I can't imagine why anybody would need to read the best of fondue cooking or whatever. But does it need to be burned in case of an emergency, perhaps? I don't know.
I thought that it would be pretty punk to have like a book burning of just really, really boring or conservative kind of books. It would be kind of a
double standard.
Right. Ironic. An ironic book burning. Yeah.
You can't burn one book and then be like, maybe you could do like a book wetting or something, like hose them down. Or,
a book hosing, yeah.
Burning them, but you're still ruining them. Black mold eventually will ruin these books.
thanks, folks, for tuning in to Speaking of Strange. This week, we're going to freestyle it a little bit. I promised Shelley more Ghosts of Mississippi.
Yay!
And, they keep coming around. We've noticed this synchronicity in recent months since I've started doing the show. We've pinned a few hauntings, local hauntings, on Ghosts of Mississippi, and there's more of those. So we'll delve into that the first hour. Second hour, maybe I'll do some features from the Vance Files, a couple of cases where I have reason to believe that the spirits were reaching out with a message for me that led me down some strange rabbit holes. And then, of course, the third hour, the Dark 30, it's what you expect. A lot of strange stuff. And Shelley is going through and approving and marking up content for the third for the Dark 30 Hour as we speak. Some good stuff, Shelley?
Oh, yeah. You can actually get away with this one right now.
I could get away with this one right now.
You can get away with that one right now.
Patient 83 checks himself out of the hospital, then steals ambulance to get home. An elderly New York man checked himself out of a hospital in the middle of the night this week and then allegedly stole an ambulance in order to get home. He was reportedly unhappy with the treatment he'd received after being admitted to Nassau University Medical Center Tuesday. So at 1 a.m., he checked himself out. After walking out of the emergency room and into the parking lot, the police say he noticed an ambulance with the keys in the ignition, got in, and drove away. Police found the man and the ambulance when someone called about a wellness check needed on a man at an area 7-Eleven. When the police met the man, they reported that he admitted to them that he'd stolen the ambulance, at which point the octogenarian reportedly was arrested. He said the care he got sucked, and he just wanted to stop, pick up a six-pack, and go home and get some sleep. After being taken back to the medical center for evaluation and treatment, the man was arraigned at his bedside on a charge of second-degree grand larceny. The man laughed at the police and said, "What are you going to do, give me life in prison? That'll be like a month or two, as I'm old as dirt." That guy's got some spark left.
That's really the only advantage I can see to growing old is when you know the end is nigh, you're like, screw it.
It can only be miserable for so much longer, right?
Yeah, I mean.
But I'm with him, you know. Sometimes all you want is a six-pack and some sleep.
Yeah.
So he stopped at the 7-Eleven for six-pack, and I guess.
I'll get a Slurpee, too.
Yeah. It reminds me, I almost gave a guy a ride from the hospital when I was delivering pizza, Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Sam, the Animal Steel, and myself, Vance Pollock, we're going to do an all pizza show 1 week, and you'll love it.
That'd be crazy.
But every story reminds us of a pizza story. My pizza story, Pizza Pete, the guy's nickname, because he ordered pizzas all the time. He lived in an assisted living facility over there down the street from
Arrowhead
Oakley.
Apartments?
Yes.
Yeah.
How'd you know? Did you know Pete? Anyway, I'm delivering at Mission Hospital late one night, and I'm going through the drop-off lane on my way out, and I see Pete coming out of the hospital. He's got a hospital gown on, and he just comes strolling out of the hospital. And I was like, I stopped, and I rolled down the window, and I was like, "Hey, Pete, what's going on?" He's like, "Can you give me a ride to my apartment?" And I was like, yeah, sure. And I kind of stalled a little bit, put the car in park, and got out and walked around and met him. And sure enough, by the time I walked around there and met him, here comes a nurse and an orderly chasing after him. I don't really know what the deal was, but he was prone to be a little bit confused. He may have burned a few brain cells, but Pete was a good guy. I almost helped him escape from the hospital on pizza delivery. So there's my pizza version.
That's a fairly benign pizza story when it comes down to our deep well of pizza stories.
Yeah.
I love the pizza stories.
If I had told it that he actually got in the car and we were pursued by security and
his flap had come open in the back.
That would have been a much better story.
He was wearing his gown backwards, and the flap came open in the front.
There's a whole lot of almost stories where if I'm to tell them honestly, I could set the story up and say, but it didn't happen. So if we were actually doing like a pizza sitcom, we would carry those stories.
Two guys, a girl, and a pizza place?
To fruition. There should be a pizza delivery sitcom. I think it would be a hit. Because
I think any
a lot of people could relate to that.
Been in could be a, you know, radio, pizza delivery, stagehands. They're all a bunch of misfits.
Yeah, I would watch like a roadie sitcom.
On Showtime recently called Roadies.
Okay.
And it had Ron White. It had Luke Wilson.
Good stuff.
I thought it was pretty good, and it didn't get renewed.
Hmm.
But it was maybe a little too serious. It was a Cameron Crowe written show.
Okay.
And it wasn't funny. It was more like drama with a little comedy thrown in, but
uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, for spring break, I went to Florida and got sick, and if you hear it in my voice, if it's a little raspy this evening, that's because I'm just trying to get out of the woods. Shelley has not been in studio with us for some time now. You care to fill us in on your Southern Gothic tour, Shelley? Of course, we got you on the phone line the last time we did a new episode, which, good Lord, it's like 3 weeks or a month ago we had you on the phone.
Yeah, it feels like forever.
But you wrapped that up. You were in Gulf Breeze.
Gulf Breeze. Capital of the UFO sightings. We were there, didn't see a UFO.
Did not get abducted.
Cold. Did not get abducted. And of course that's not one of my goals. It's one of Joshua's goals, not mine. But it seemed like the cold weather followed us the whole way. But it was fun and it was nice to get away. And while we did try and find some monsters, we were unsuccessful. But next time, we're going to catch something.
Right.
It might not be a monster, but you'll catch something in New Orleans.
HPVs or something. yeah, you were hanging out at the Vampire Speakeasy. Some friends that were listening to that episode were like, wow, Vampire Speakeasy, that sounds pretty nifty.
Oh, it was fabulous. Did it give you the name of it?
No, I don't think so.
Potions Lounge. That's the name of it. You can go online and look, and you'll see the big velvet purple couch that we sat on. It was amazing.
Sounds like it could
was
be a strip club
best
too.
Night. What?
It could be a strip club too. Maybe after hours.
And maybe after hours. Yeah.
Potions Lounge.
Potions Lounge.
Yeah, and who was the guy that we were gonna hook Shelley up with?
Oh, should we say his name?
Yeah, if I could remember his name.
The Impaler.
Oh, yeah. The Impaler. Sharky.
When I got home that night, I watched so many videos of that dude. And I can't tell if, like, it's a joke on him, if he's a part of the joke, in which case it would be slight. But, I mean, my lady friend, she was like, that's enough. We just have to stop watching this. This is like, it was funny for the first 15 minutes. Now we're into minute 45. Shut it off. But
right.
He's totally up Shelley's alley.
The Impaler Sharky.
The Impaler.
And Shelley's over here shaking
Shelley
her head.
Sharky.
She doesn't even like us to joke about that anymore. It kind of creeped her out. Josh was offering you up to him on the air one time.
Yeah.
So maybe we better go easy on Shelley about the Impaler. But you got to watch out when you're prowling the vampire speakeasies of New Orleans. This is Joshua P. Warren speaking of strange. I'm your host, Vance Pollock. Strap in and get ready for a joyride. We'll be right back after this.
Save it. We'll waste.
to Speaking of Strange. And welcome back to the studio, Investigator Shelley Wright. You made it in one piece. And you brought, you came bearing gifts.
I did.
She brought pralines and little voodoo dolls, but not the bad kind of voodoo dolls. We told the story about when Josh brought you guys some voodoo dolls that really had some bad mojo stuck to them, and you guys had to
Get rid of them.
You had to perform a ritual to relieve yourself of the curse of these voodoo dolls. And the memo went out to Joshua P. Warren, no more voodoo dolls. But Shelley comes back from New Orleans, right. And what does she bring?
And she brought me a voodoo doll.
No, it wasn't a real, it was a fake voodoo doll.
But
Shelley brought me a voodoo pencil. You didn't see that, Sam. It's out on the dashboard of my car. But she brought me like a Zulu warrior feathers, you know, sticking out the top of his head like a Mardi Gras float, Zulu warrior voodoo doll pencil.
It was fun.
Which, yeah, it's cute. It says it's a good fortune.
It's a good fortune. It is.
Which,
and I didn't feel anything bad. I didn't have any weird stuff happen.
I wasn't, after I saw that it was a Freddy Krueger voodoo doll, I was cool with it.
Well, see, it's because I knew that you had a horror movie fascination.
Yeah, and since it's not just some random thing that can get souls sucked in, it's Freddy Krueger.
It's Freddy Krueger. He's not going to steal your soul. Not in a voodoo
He'll
doll.
Steal your
We're the dream warriors.
Part four. Is that right?
Maybe
part,
tonight we will come.
Part four?
Dokken. Did Dokken do that?
Yeah.
That was sweet.
Yeah, it was.
If we got any room for a bumper, we might have to pull
I actually
in some
won
Dokken Dream Warriors.
When they did the remake of Nightmare on Elm Street a couple years ago, like the reimagining or whatever, and the kid from Bad News Bears was the Freddy. They had like somebody dressed up as Freddy in the theater. They were doing trivia, and I actually won free movie passes by knowing who did Dream Warriors.
Wow.
Yeah. They were like, what movie? I think it was like part four, Dokken.
I found the single for Dream Warriors like 15 years ago and took it over to a buddy of mine's house and popped it in the cassette player at like 7 in the morning and cranked it way up. Good times. He was none too happy. His wife is the one that was none too happy. He was amused, but his wife...
They were both curious as to why you were in their house at 7 in the morning.
Yeah, well, yeah, there was a lot of drinking going on in those days, and mornings, nights kind of blurred together, kind of like you were saying. If you got to get up early in the morning, sometimes you might as well just stay up all night. It was one of those situations. But Dokken always made it a little better, a little more wholesome to end the night or begin the day with Dokken Dream Warriors. What are we even going on here about? I did promise that we would get into the ghosts of Mississippi. Maybe I should go ahead and recap this segment so we can launch into it proper the next segment. Shelley and I have found that some of the ghosts that we keep bumping into here in Buncombe County, North Carolina, are often from Tallahatchie, Mississippi, somewhere along the banks of the Tallahatchie River.
Way down yonder on the Tallahatchie.
Right, yeah. Well, there's the Tallahatchie. The Tallahatchie song is that Bobby Gentry tune, Ode to Billy Joe. That's like that's where it's... history is sort of sealed in song, I think. Are there any French Broad songs? I know there's a band called the South French Broads, which I think is a great name. But there aren't really any French Broad River songs.
Don't go swimming in the French Broad.
There should be like an anthem to the French Broad River. But anyway, this when I keep seeing these dead people with connections to the Tallahatchie River down in Mississippi, which is a good, 700 miles from here or more, it makes me kind of think there's something going on here, because first of all, it's a sparsely populated area, so that there would be any sort of synchronicity, any sort of convergence between ghosts that we encounter here in the mountains and the Tallahatchie River down in Mississippi would be the same as if you just threw a dart, you know, at a map of the United States, and all of a sudden people in that area were being haunted by ghosts from the Swannanoa district. I mean, it seems like some disparity there. I still don't know what the connection is, but more and more I'm seeing this. And one of the more random ones recently is when Shelley and I went to Sheriff John Lyerly's grave and left some flowers on the date of his death. That was in January, a couple months ago. But as we were walking back to the car, we had been talking about Uncle Billy Brown, another very powerful spirit here locally that I feel can communicate information on personalities from Asheville from 100 years ago, because in life he was an old guy who had worked on the street railway, the trolleys, for years, 40 or 50 years he had worked on the street railway and retired, and then lived to be an old man and passed away. I mean, but would have known practically everybody who was anybody in Asheville. And if you ride the street, the trolley every day for 40 or 50 years, you know you've got all the gossip. You hear all the gossip.
Of course you do.
So Uncle Billy is what I like to consider a friendly, chatty spirit.
Yes.
And if you need the dirt on somebody, you can go to visit Uncle Billy's grave and ask him about so-and-so, and Uncle Billy will
point you in the right direction.
It's happened for me. Uncle Billy helped me track down a grave of one of his colleagues. Anyway, that story, if it hasn't been told before, maybe we'll get into that a little bit. Uncle Billy was in a photo of streetcar motorman from about 1905, that was hanging on the wall in a funeral photo. Okay, there's a photograph of a casket with two Ku Klux Klansmen in uniform standing alongside of it. And this was in the archives of the Pack Library, and also there's a negative at UNCA Library. And nobody knew whose funeral this was. Now, you know, we're thinking 100 years later, this is not something good. This is not the sort of photo you want in the family album. You know, this is great granddad's funeral, and here's the Ku Klux Klan, you know, his brothers in the Klan there. So it was not revealed whose funeral this was, but hanging on the walls is picture of the streetcar motorman. And I recognize that picture because there's a print of that at Pack Library with all the names on the back. So I had to assume that whoever's in that casket is in this group portrait. And so I just picked Uncle Billy Brown off the end of the front row, the oldest guy in the photo, and I started to learn a little bit about him, and I kind of invented this idea that Uncle Billy Brown knows whose funeral this is, and he'll tell me if I can find where he's buried, and I go and ask him. So that's what I did. Literally, I went to the cemetery, and I found Uncle Billy Brown's grave, and I kneeled down there, and I plucked a weed from his grave, and I said, "Uncle Billy, whose funeral was that? I really want to know." And within a day, I had my answer. I knew whose Klan funeral that was. And I located the grave. It's right down here in, right down the hill from the station here. Is that Green, Green Hills?
Green Hills.
It's in Green Hills Cemetery.
So my grandparents are buried.
My grandma's there.
It was your grandfather's funeral. No, it wasn't. H.P. Jones. It's not unusual for almost anyone to have a grandparent who was in the Ku Klux Klan, because about 4 million Americans were.
Or just really racist.
Yeah.
It was a different time.
Yeah, not necessarily organized. Some just weren't all that. Some just didn't have it together, you know. But some were just like, yeah.
They're just crazy. He hated everybody.
Racists.
But the gist of the story is dead people are chatty.
Yeah. Dead people are chatty.
Not Grandpa.
Anyway, Rivers Brown is where we were going with this. And straight down the Tallahatchie to Mississippi when we come back from this break. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. Mississippi is one of the most all-around haunted places I've ever encountered. Scattered between sizable towns are miles and miles of back roads with the occasional village forgotten to the modern world. I've spent a few weeks all told wandering these back roads, and one of the gloomiest, oppressively cursed feeling areas I came across was LaFleur County. The county seat, Greenwood, is nice enough if you want to feel like you're walking down the sidewalk of any southern small town in about 1960. Where it went bad was at my decision to start asking around about Billy Joe McAllister. I knew from the old song and the movie starring Robbie Benson that he had supposedly jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge. Now the Tallahatchie River runs all over LaFleur, so just which bridge was my quandary. One local fellow having coffee with some friends at the gas station seemed quite confident. That was over in Money, wasn't it? He asked around the table to shrugs. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was over at Money. Well, leaving Greenwood, bound for the town of Money, you soon cross a sturdy iron bridge, which would have suited me just fine for a death leap, and if I'd been told this was the place, I would have believed it and gone back to the motel. But I wanted the genuine article, so I traveled a few miles on, by this time in the dark, and turned off on a dirt road by the dust-swept sign bearing the seemingly prosperous name Money. It seemed like I was driving through desolation, bare cotton fields, twigs sticking up through the clay like skeleton fingers. The day before, as we drove south out of Yahoo City toward Vicksburg, we'd hit a deer, caught him right in the rump with a driver's side headlight. This busted the mount, but left the bulb burning, so I wired it back in, pointing off into the sky so that my traveling companion commented that it was rigged for possum hunting. This poor illumination situation made the cruise toward Money all the more dreadful. At one point, bumping along about 15 miles an hour, I nearly petrified with fear when I saw a ghost wavering off to the side of the road. A second later, I realized it was but a white plastic bag caught and blowing on a stick, but even then the ghostly aura of this place would not subside. We pulled onto a long, modern concrete bridge, again crossing the Tallahatchie, and came to a T in the road. As I stopped and the dust caught up and overtook the car, I beheld Money, Mississippi. It looked like the whole place consisted of about a dozen buildings at most, spread out on a patch of dirt under ancient oaks. Most seemed to be homes, but off to the left was a humble church house with even humbler graveyard alongside it. We took all of about a minute idling past the settlement and decided the new concrete slab must have replaced an older bridge from which Billy Joe ended it all. We turned around and, since the whole place seemed asleep, parked the car on the bridge and got out. This was the eeriest single feeling I've ever had. Standing on the bridge and looking down the river into the darkness, I witnessed the single most incredible firefly display on Earth, seemingly thousands of them. The dark water rolled along like it carried countless forgotten lost souls. Billy Joe McAllister could not have picked a more macabre venue for his demise. The haze gleaming with insect orbs over the river turned my thoughts toward will-o'-wisps, luring and lulling the wistful observer. Wouldn't the water feel cool? It's so hot, so dusty, sweaty out here. Wouldn't a nice swim do a fellow good? The draw was almost convincing, but I resisted, my mind nonetheless continually churning, my head almost spinning, a little drunk, though I hadn't had a drop all day. Money, Mississippi, just this side of hell. I wrote that for the Lemur Forum back in 2008 in the Mississippi regional forums. Josh started the Lemur Forums, good Lord, 15 or more years ago. I don't know, but what the Lemur Forum predates the show you're listening to now, speaking of strange. But I am your host, Vance Pollock, and introducing you to some personal ghosts of Mississippi. We're talking about Uncle Billy Brown and how when we were walking back from Sheriff Lyerly's grave in January, we were standing near one of the flat markers out there at Beaver Dam for a young lady named Rivers Brown. And I thought, that's kind of a interesting name. You don't think of, if you were to hear of a young lady named Rivers now, you would think, oh, that's kind of nice. But with all the hippies around Asheville, that would seem kind of normal. But you don't think of someone 100 years ago named Rivers. No. That's kind of edgy. If your great grandma's name was Rivers, and you were a hippie now, you would have like some old school cred. You would be like, yeah, Grandma Rivers. So anyway, I was drawn to her name and the fact that we were talking about Billy Brown, and here's Rivers Brown's grave. And I decided to, and I told Shelley on the spot, I said, I'm going to look her up, Shelley, and see what her story is. And she had died, I'm not sure if it was of TB or influenza or something like that, but she had died of one of these illnesses that we feel like we've pretty much got control of by now. But when she passed away, I believe in the 1930s, there were a lot more things that could kill you. If you got sick, if you ran a fever for a few days, that could be all she wrote. But anyway, so Rivers Brown had passed away, a young woman, but she was from Tallahatchie County, Mississippi. And when I told Shelley that, I said, you know, these ghosts of Mississippi are following us around. And then there was the case of Emily. We told that one on the show a while back, how right. Shelley was still curious about this little girl named Emily.
She haunted me, so to speak, 20 years.
And it was peculiar to see her grandparents' gravestones from the house that you lived in, or from the estate that you lived in out here north of Asheville, to find their graves. I believe they're buried in Florida, right down somewhere around Jacksonville, Florida. But we found photographs from the cemetery of Emily's grandmother, whose name was also Emily.
Right.
and grandfather who built the house out there in the Grove Park neighborhood of north of Asheville. And very prominently on the front of their gravestones, which is unusual to me, you rarely see this, but on the front of their gravestone, very prominently, it says, born in Black Hawk, Mississippi, and on the other one, born in LaFleur County, Mississippi. You usually don't find gravestones that have marked in bold letters right on the front of the stone where they were from, but these people of that generation had a sense of pride that we come from these godforsaken parts of Mississippi. But yeah, and their granddaughter Emily is the one that was throwing your trash out on the floor some years ago.
She was fun.
Anyway, recently I was up at Buck Spring Lodge. Well, the lodge is long gone, but I was up at Buck Spring Overlook near Mount Pisgah on the Blue Ridge Parkway. That's one of my regular spots. If I just want to go up with the family for a Sunday drive and stand and gaze upon God's majesty, these mountains. I go up there to Buck Spring.
What mile marker is that?
You know where the Mount Pisgah Inn
is? Yeah, so it's like four.
It's a mile or so back this side of Mount Pisgah Inn. Actually, if you were going to the Pisgah Trail head, you would have to pull into the Buck Springs parking area and down to the far end. But if instead of going to the Pisgah Trail head, you just park as soon as you get into the parking lot, you find the nearest available parking spot and follow the trail off to the right from the parking area, and that's Buck Spring. And, you know, maybe 100 yards up into the woods, there's a great overlook. But there in the woods below the overlook, actually down closer to the parkway, there is an old spring house. And we had never noticed it before because usually when we're up there, the leaves are on, you know. But this time, because when I turned up in the parking area and it's still early spring and most of the leaves are off, I noticed the old spring house in the woods. And I said, we got to go check the old spring house. We've been up here a dozen times and I've never been to the spring house. So we did go there and we took some photographs. And I don't extend much credit to your typical orb photos because I know it's very easy to get a photograph that has some weird light anomalies. A drop of water will do it, or a speck on the lens of the camera or something like that. But in the context of a series of photos my wife took that day, there were a couple of very curious things that made me take a second look. And we'll get around to the Mississippi connection when we come back from these messages. You're listening to Speaking the Strange.
Dusty Delta day. I was out chopping cotton and my brother was baling hay. And at dinner time we stopped and walked back to the house to eat. And Mama hollered at the back door, y'all remember to wipe your feet. She said, I got some news this morning from Choctaw Ridge. Today, Billy Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge. And Papa said to Mama as he passed around the black-eyed peas, oh, Billy Joe never had a liquor since. Pass the biscuits, please. there's 5 more acres in the lower 40 I got planned. And Mama said it was a shame about Billy Joe. Seems like nothing ever comes to no good up on Choctaw Ridge. Billy Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge. Brother said he recollected when he and Tom and Billy Joe.
Welcome back to Speaking of Strange. I'm Vance Pollock. I'm going to have to try and pull it all together, tie it all up, tie it off. Before we bleed out this last segment of Hour 1, Speaking of Strange, keeping you company Saturday night. Mississippi, the ghosts of Mississippi, and the fact that we keep seeing them up here and that I had another close call with them. Before the break, I mentioned that I'd got some anomalous photos at a spring house up there at Buck Spring on the parkway near Mount Pisgah. Well, here's the thing. I'm not scared of much, and I think most guys are supposed to say that, but I think it's pretty true. I would say that when I was a teenager, I was afraid of just about anything painful. But as you get older and you've been abused and beat up and everything like that, pain doesn't really scare you anymore. I think that in some way, the things that we're most phobic of, or a phobia, if it's a well-founded fear, it's not a phobia, though, right? But I think most of the things that people find disagreeable or frightening have potentially painful results. And it's not that I'm afraid, well, the idea of a rat climbing up my pants leg and biting me is just absolutely frightening. Rats scare me. Okay, that's what I'm getting at. I'm scared of rats, and I told my kids that, you know, because kids all play that game. What are you really afraid of? Oh, I'm scared of snakes. I'm scared of spiders. I'm not scared of spiders and snakes, but I am scared of big beady-eyed rats, and to a lesser degree, mice. So when we go up to the spring house and my kids go inside and they look up in the rafters and they see mice running around up there, they're like, Dad, there's mice in the spring house. And they wondered if their dad would actually go in the spring house because there were mice in there. So I had to man up and go in there. And honestly, I had to swallow hard. And take a deep breath to step into this little compact space where there are mice running in the rafters. Ooh.
She'll do anything for your kids.
Yeah, so I did it, and I stepped in there, and I leaned up against the stones on the other wall, and I'm keeping an eye on the rafters. But I have this sense of dread or fear as I step into this spring house, and my wife is standing outside taking pictures of me while I'm staring up into the rafters looking out for these mice, which I'm petrified of. And the photos she caught of me in the spring house, two of them back to back, had huge orbs. Two orbs with a third orb in the middle of it. I'll have to get these photos out there so people can tell me what they think of it. I showed it to Josh, and Josh thought it was pretty impressive looking example of light orbs in photos. I mean, usually you can explain these away because of the angle of the light and the camera, you know, it's a lens flare. But this was a kind of a unique orb, and it was right on top of my head, almost covering my head up, and I could see the look on my face was, oh, please, mice, don't jump out of the rafters on me and bite me in the neck. But here's this orb in one photo, and in the next photo, it's even closer to the camera, so that what you see in the corner of the photo, even though she hadn't zoomed in or anything, was that this one of these orbs is just maybe a quarter of it, is in the foreground in the corner of the photo cut off, which is a little unusual. Usually you see orbs in their entirety in the photo. But here are two photos taken just a few seconds apart, and the orbs are large and right over my face and head. And then in the next photo, there's part of one of the same orbs, or what appears to be the same orb, down in the corner of the photo. So maybe I'll put those out there for listeners to take a look at. Unusual. But then I got to talking to my buddy Rick Russell, who, perhaps coincidentally, has family from Mississippi and had been doing genealogy work down there. He's my my genealogy buddy, history buddy. And I'm talking to him about it, and he said, now you got to find out who's in that spring house, who might be haunting you or following you around from the spring house. And I said, you know, I did find a pile of cremains up there with the little silver tag still intact on the trail behind that spring house a year or two back. Actually, it's in the Joshua P. Warren Mystery Museum now, this little silver tag from a pile of human cremated remains that I found, because I picked the silver tag up and put it in my pocket. And he said, I think you might need to get Shelley back up there to the spring house with you to return that tag.
Oops. Might not have.
So what do you think, Shelley? Is it probably not a good idea to pick up souvenirs from piles of human ashes?
I would say that's a pretty safe bet. Don't do it. Just leave it. Leave it.
But the funeral home from LaFleur County, Mississippi. We'll be right back.